Welcome to the Pocket Gamer iPhone and iPad Gaming Podcast. It's episode 230, and I am your host, James Gilmore. Joining me for this particularly special E3-ish edition of the podcast, we have Mr. Peter Willington.
Hi.
And Senor Keith Andrew.
When you say E3-ish, is that because none of us are actually there?
Yes, it's because it's been happening sort of outside of our sphere of experience.
To our colleagues. Exactly.
So we've got someone out in the field. As we said last week, John is out there beating the streets. Well, not beating the streets. Pounding the podiums, I guess.
Our good friend, the American, is out there as well.
Is that capital T, capital A? The American.
Yeah, the American.
It's our local. It's Matt Dinier, isn't it?
Matt Diener is out there, yeah.
Yeah, that guy. He's out there as well. He's seeing things. He's been reporting back, and we've got lots of lovely stuff relating to E3 up on the site, a lot of which we're going to cover. Slightly different this week, being as it's E3, there's been a lot of kind of teasers and trailers and, ooh, look what's coming, and there's not been much in the way of new releases, because no one really wants to release anything while all this E3 noise is going on. So, what we're going to do is we're going to touch a little bit on that iOS 7 thing. Very important and should be covered because I'm sure opinions are forthcoming, Mr. Keith Andrew.
I don't know what you mean.
I didn't think you would. And we're going to give you a big old rundown of what E3 has delivered, all the new exciting trailers and things like that, and what you can look forward to the rest of this year. All that and so much more in the news. News! Before we get into that, though, it's the update as always. We're back at The Simpsons Tapped Out yet again. This game is constantly being updated. We can only assume because it's mad popular and teams are working hard at making more stuff for it because it's just making all of the money. This time we've got a summer update now that the sun is apparently appearing in the sky in some places around the world. I'll let you know when that happens. This time EA has thrown in a whole bunch of new plots of land. Apparently, 30 in total, and new buildings such as the Ferris Wheel and the Frying Dutchman, which is that restaurant what is owned by the fisherman chap. There are some new characters thrown in as well. We got the sea captain himself and his sidekick, Handsome Pete. It's still free to download, and it's still taking all of your money and time, apparently. So, summer stuff, more things to do, you go for it. Oh yeah, and another franchise that you may have heard of is Angry Birds Star Wars, and they've added Lando. You, Lando. He's turning up, and what is he doing? He's firing lasers. Loads of lasers. 3 lasers, in fact, at the same time. Extra levels for that, so more of that flying steam vent stuff that they do before, where you fly your bird into a vent and steam flies out and it pushes him in a different direction. But this time you can play as Lando and stitch up your mates, your other birds. One of the buttons has to be betray. They have to be like an on-screen betray button where he just says, you know, they arrived just before you did. And then all the other birds go, God, you Lando. Okay, let's do the important stuff. iOS 7 is very nearly here. It's not actually live for everybody yet, but we've seen it. We've seen it in action, and a couple of our staff members are actually using it at this very moment. If you go onto the site, look at it was covered in the WWDC 2013 bit we've got live, which is the show where Apple showed all this stuff off. Tim Cook stood up and went, "This is the biggest change to iOS since the introduction of the iPhone." Wow. Is it going to look like Windows? Or is it just going to be one massive button that says phone and you hit it and you make a call on your phone?
Call on an iPhone?
I know, that's what I mean. It's a big change, Keith. They're pushing forward in exciting new directions. As it turned out, it wasn't like... I mean, it's a big change. If you've seen the pictures, they're up on the site. Go and have a look at them. The thumbnails are still there. The shape looks very similar. The layout looks very similar. But it's all been sort of flattened and sleekened, which definitely isn't a word. They've tried to make it a little bit more like, well, like some other operating systems, we might say. Keith, you did a big old expose on this. What's your take on the iOS 7 look?
Yeah, I got it in a massive excitement because you have to say that no one reveals things like this like Apple does. The crowd was in a... Well, they were very pleased. The problem that they have is that everyone knew this was coming, as they tend to kind of guess everything's coming with Apple, whether a hardware or software. Mm. And so obviously the internet in the weeks before was awash with either mock-ups or lots of people who, you know, who have jailbroken iPhones have their own skins on anyway. And most of them tend to be flat. So they were kind of awash with some really, really stunning designs in the months ahead. Mm. And then, so kind of almost whatever Apple did was going to be slightly disappointing. But I have to say the way they revealed it was amazing and it looked really good on the screen. And all the little demos they did, you thought, yeah, no, this is a real improvement. I can see what they've done here. So I download
video, like when they show it all up and they put it up on the screen and their little trailer was dead flash. And like, it is quite convincing, isn't it?
Yes. And then you download it. And it's kind of essentially all it is a new skin. Everything is a new skin. Basically, where all the buttons were before within apps, there are no longer buttons. There are just kind of words, but they're in the same location. So everything kind of works. You know how to work it because it works exactly the same as it always did. There are a few changes. You don't seem to be able to tweet or Facebook status from the OS anymore. You're supposed to pull down that menu at the top, and I don't know whether that's just something they've taken out because it's not finished yet or whether it will reappear when it comes out properly, but at the moment that's not there and that's slightly annoying actually.
But
that aside, everything else is largely identical. There's this new kind of control center, which seems to be inspired by BlackBerry 10, let's say.
This thing where you swipe up and you get like Bluetooth and all that.
Yeah, it's kind of the idea is so that you're always wherever you are, you can always you're always connected to the OS. You can always do things. Kind of what BlackBerry kind of went on about with theirs.
Yeah.
The redefining of all the fonts and everything is very actually Android. They've gone for this really, really thin font, obviously because the screen's good enough now that you can see it. Mm. And that all looks, I mean, ironically, the app that most suits this new flat look that they've gone for with all the thin fonts is Google's YouTube app. I mean, it fits in perfectly. You would think it was part of the OS. It's just like they knew. And then obviously the kind of flatter look is obviously Windows Phone inspired, but it's not kind of almost far enough. It is literally just a new skin. So they've replaced all the icons with the supposedly flatter, more minimalist kind of icons, but they're almost not minimalist enough. Some of them look damn awful, to be honest.
We've been talking about this kind of flattening of design that's been happening recently, that everything is going a little bit 2D and colors are going bold, and where things used to look kind of either embossed or raised and kind of shiny, now everything has gone a bit flat, and this is kind of what they delivered. But you're right, you look at the some of the screenshots they've shown and some of the icons look almost completely flat, just like total block color, and then other ones still look a bit shaded and a bit kind of there's a gradient on them, and then you see some other icons that look pretty much exactly the same as they always used to, and it looks a bit confused. Now maybe that's just because the beginning, you know, this is, we're still in the early stages and all the other icons haven't properly been worked over yet, but it does look slightly not quite one thing or the other.
Yeah, I mean, they had this grand the slick video you talked about had a little section where they literally illustrated the idea behind all the new icons, keeping them within the same boundaries so that they all match up. But as a lot of kind of design folks have been pointing out, the boundary that they've made within the app icon is too big. So a lot of the and I know it's just a trick of the eye, but on the new App Store and iTunes icons, I mean, I've just given you two a link that obviously.
Oh yeah, I pulled it up.
Won't be able to see, but that's what mine currently looks like. When you look at the circle that's around those icons, a lot of the time it looks like the circle's just off to the left for some reason. It's almost too big that it doesn't look in the center, and it's that kind of thing which you think you look at it and you think, oh, what's that? You know, that looks a bit. Whereas lots of people have done mock-ups since how they would retool these new retooled icons, and basically all they do is make a lot of them smaller.
Right.
I mean, like the camera app icon looks really naff.
It looks very much
looks
Instagram looks out of place because it looks very 3D still. And
exactly. I mean, I've got Tweetbot, and the icon of that looks completely daft now compared to the other. And that's the other thing. I think the icon that looks best actually is Microsoft SkyDrive one, which is flat already.
Just completely, 2D and nothing. Peter, have you had a chance to look at this?
I don't know. I quite like the fact that they're changing things up, and I really like the fact that when you do get a new S, it often feels like you've got a brand new device, like a nice little refresh.
Feels
like you're getting a little bit something extra for no money, basically, and I quite like that. But this sort of redesign, it looks a little bit Fisher-Price.
Yeah.
That's not necessarily like a bad thing. It's just that because users have so much more control over how their phones look now, and, you know, with games developers and software developers creating their own apps and doing their own things and having this massive library of apps which already have these, you know, these app icons like Tweetbot, like Instagram, like you were saying, Keith, like to do this refresh and to go so far in another direction, it's like suddenly everything feels very sort of higgledy-piggledy. It feels like a naff and like version of Android. Do you know what I mean? Like, it just, but it does. Like, I think Android can look really sleek. I think it can look really elegant. But sometimes it just looks like a horrible mismatch, like, you know, mishmash. And I think that that's absolutely the case here. It's just not very appealing.
Well, I think there's every chance that most of the third party apps, the savvy ones anyway, will redesign.
Sure.
I think there's a big call out for anyway for Instagram. I think that kind of whole idea is a bit old now of the way Instagram, that both the icon and parts of the actual app look a bit, you know, it's meant to look like this old thingy camera. I think that's kind of a bit naff now anyway. Whereas things like new apps like Vine already are kind of flat, and I don't think there's any surprise. I don't think it was any coincidence that Facebook recently just jigged its both the app and the icon in recent months. So again, they were a little bit flatter. There's no way Apple would have done this and not told people like Facebook. But
does this not feel a little bit like Apple just catching up with everybody else? Like, it just feels like, yeah, this flat look is kind of cool and kind of in now, but is this really going to be about for more than another 6 to 9 months?
I think it is. It's already been about for a couple of years anyway. If you look at things across the media, apart from tacky things, the tacky channels, most of the things do tend to be kind of flat. I think what this is about, the problem is when you get like iOS, they almost can't grow anymore. They're selling huge numbers now, but a lot of that is to people upgrading. And so it's less about now doing things to draw in new consumers in markets like the US and the UK. It's more about making sure you keep the ones you've got. And if you can rejig your OS so that it, as it kind of feels, that it takes bits from BlackBerry, Windows Phone and Android, so that anyone who's maybe tempted, who's seen one of those other operating systems, thinks, oh, I like that bit, and that's kind of good, will now think, oh, well, I've kind of got that on mine now, so I don't need to. I'll just get another iPhone.
Wouldn't it be nice to just kind of offer different skins for different people, though?
Could do, but I don't think Apple are quite ready to hand over the reins to control that much.
But like, you know,
the problem it might face, ironically, is I wrote a piece like 4 or 5 months ago about how when you go into a phone shop, and I assume this is probably the same in the US, the problem a Windows phone has is that because it relies on people changing the size of tiles and inputting their photos and their contacts to make its home screens come alive, when you go and see a demo unit in a shop, which has just been left as it was, with just big coloured squares not doing anything on the front, it looks really odd. And I think that the kind of vanilla version of this, again, on handsets in shops, might look a bit odd until people start jigging around with it and making their own. Because it's literally, I've been fiddling around with it for the last 3 or 4 days. My first reaction was, when you kind of get the skin and everything that it gives you, is this looks ugly. And it wasn't until other people who'd also downloaded it started messaging me, showing me what they'd done with theirs. And I kept thinking, why does theirs look so much nicer than mine? And so I kind of spent on and off over the course of one evening, kind of half hour, fiddling around trying to get the best wallpaper for it, trying to get the best backgrounds, that it actually reordering all my apps so that the ugly ones were kind of hidden and the nice ones were on the front. And so I think that's the kind of the problem they face, is by kind of going this way, you risk people not quite understanding what it looks like, and it could look a bit shoddy in stores. But I think most people already have decided they want an iPhone when they want an iPhone, and they're not bothered what it looks like in a shop. But it's a start, isn't it? I mean, I think they'll go further in the years ahead.
Yeah, Well, I mean, we've talked a lot about the aesthetics of it. There have obviously been some functional changes too. So you mentioned the control center thing, which lets you kind of swipe up from the bottom of the device, and that gives you Bluetooth, Wi-Fi, music controls, that sort of thing. Apparently, there's now full multitasking on the apps, but iOS still kind of controls it, checks usage patterns, and only gives you background activity when you need it, that sort of thing. There's some extra stuff to Safari. It's got a smart search field. You can have multi-page folders to let all your games go into one drawer rather than having to keep having loads of different ones. There's an AirDrop system, which apparently allows you to share stuff with other iOS devices around you without having to rub them against each other or any of that nonsense, which I thought was a bit silly. And the App Store now updates apps automatically.
Yeah, that's what I'm not sure about, actually.
Really?
What? Well, developers are very keen, obviously, because it means that without, you know, all people who have the game essentially will have the latest version whenever it's pushed out. Mm. But I, having watched it do it, it updated some of my apps yesterday, and it kind of chugs around doing it. I don't know if this is because my iPod is obviously Wi-Fi only. I was in my flat when it was doing it, but it wasn't really doing it very happily. It was kind of taking ages, and I was kind of watching it while I was doing it. And the other thing, people who, I don't know, you might be on a limit and it's just kind of downloading stuff without asking. And
presumably you can shut it on or off, right?
Well, you might do. I haven't found any option for that. I assume there would be.
Yeah.
I haven't looked that hard, but I haven't seen it anywhere in the settings to tell it that, but it may be there. I don't know, that kind of thing. I mean, like anything on my PC, I always tell it to tell me to update rather than doing it automatically. I don't like the idea of that.
But sneaking off behind your back, doing its own thing.
Well, you know, we're at the stage where apps aren't big enough now to, you know, I shouldn't think it would really impact most apps updating in the background on someone if they'd got a limited data connection. But some of them are getting bigger now,
you know,
and they won't even download unless you're in Wi-Fi. So you would hope that is how it, you know.
Well, I assume that I think there should be a setting where it's like auto update provided you're on Wi-Fi or something like that. And if there isn't, I'm sure they'll throw one in. The other thing I wanted to ask, because obviously I haven't got it, the version yet. I've got an iPad and they're not releasing the kind of test version of that for another week or two, I think. What about this 3D layered nonsense? Because when you see the video and the way it's presented, it's the idea that you kind of have the background, you have the apps, and then you have, if you choose another control, if you drop down the settings menu, it kind of sits on top and it uses the accelerometer if you move it around to give this kind of faux 3D impression. Is that automatic, and is it on all the time, and is it balls?
So with iOS 7, you have two kind of backgrounds. You have a static one or an animated one. If you have an animated one, which just like, I don't know, it's like bubbles moving up in the background or whatever, it doesn't do that. If you have a static one, then it does. But all it does is, it's just a trick. You know, any OS could do this. It, as you tilt it left, it moves the icons on the top slightly to the right. So whereas the background stays still, so it gives the impression that the two layers are, you know, that it, two different layers and one's moving left.
Yeah.
With, you know, so the only time it was annoying actually was the first time I picked it up. I was a bit nippy. I was shivering, and because my hand was shaking, it literally reacts to the tiniest movement. So it looked like my iPod was having some kind of
seizure.
It was kind of like that. I don't know. It's the kind of thing. It's a very Apple kind of thing to do, actually. The kind of little touch that people, again, might be in a shop and just pick up and think, oh, that's nice. And then it does that. It's not anything wow.
Well, it looked cute on the video. It's one of those things that when they presented it, you kind of go, ooh, ah, that is pretty. But then I thought, practically, is that not just going to be annoying and have all my icons slightly moving around the screen whenever I move my hand? Isn't that going to be a pain in the ass?
Yeah, you don't. I suspect after a week or so, you wouldn't even notice it was doing it. It's just a little trick. It's not particularly flash. I'd rather they'd spent more time making better icons for some of them.
Well, quite. I assume that the community will catch up to it and that they'll try and kind of normalize all of the icons to fit this new profile, this new standard.
The thing is that, you know, the problem Apple always has is that it was first, essentially, when it came to all the App Store and all that. So it set the benchmark, and because it has the most apps, any change is going to affect a great number of the people than if the other operating systems change something. So, but you know, they have to. It did need changing.
Yes, I'm agreed. Well, everyone else is going to be able to get hold of it. If you've got an iPhone 4 or later, or an iPad 2 or later, or iPad mini, iPod Touch 5 or later, you'll be able to get it sometime this autumn. It'll be appearing. The beta's like already out now, so if for some reason you have access to that, you know, you might be able to see it in the wild. And we've got a couple of articles up on the site and on PG Biz as well, which basically just walk you through all the details. There's a load of other features we haven't mentioned today, so go and have a look and see what you can expect from your brand new operating system, because it's going to be coming whether you like it or not.
I suppose you don't have to update, do you?
Does it make you, or will it pester you every time you turn it on? And say,
probably, and I suppose as you go longer, some apps will stop working. I suppose
that's what's going to happen. Of course, while this was going on, this WWDC iOS 7 stuff, there were a whole bunch of other people in an entirely different conference hall looking at games. Loads of games, loads of new games. It's E3, isn't it? And that means that lots and lots of developers have been teasing you, enticing you, luring you in with their sexy new release videos and screenshots that are probably entirely unrepresentative of the finished product. advertising. But regardless of that, we've been collating them all, having a look at them, and here is the big old rundown of the new stuff we've seen at E3 this week. We'll bust through them kind of quickly. It's either been at the show or they've been released while it's all been going on, so we'll just cover everything. Firstly, Angry Birds Go! Which is not the command you might think it would be. Rovio has just released this picture, this one image. Go to the site, type in Angry Birds Go! You'll see a picture. It kind of looks like a little valley with a cloud of smoke, you know, as if someone has run down the middle of it with a big puff of feathers at the end. That's all it is. That's all that was put up on Facebook. But we're thinking Angry Birds Endless Runner.
Yep.
And that is the sound of Peter caring.
Rovio's going to have to, like, I like what Rovio does. I think we all do. I think everybody who isn't an absolute, you know, mobile hater, step off player, you know, they understand that Rovio make really slick, really well put together quality products. But ultimately, they come out, do Angry Birds. It's absolutely amazing. Like, iterate on it. They're all pretty good, but very much based on the same ideas. Then they release, you know, Amazing Alex, and it's like, this is okay, but this game's been done before. Mm. And it's like, if this does end up being an endless runner, I just don't know whether or not they've quite got the chops to make me care about runners again. Like, there's been so many of them.
Yeah, I'm not sure anything has the chops to make me care again about endless runners.
Like,
I didn't even care that much in the first place. I mean, they worked, and they were well-suited to mobile devices, but I was never, like, Woot Temple Run or anything.
But I'll tell you what, I will bet you that, you know, the people who are heavily invested in this company are going, brilliant, absolutely brilliant. Like, Angry Birds brand plus, you know, Temple Run, basically. Mm. Like, wicked. Yeah, up for that, because we'll make loads of cash. Because I would imagine that the main audience that they're going for probably aren't burnt out on these kind of games.
I hope it's 2D rather than 3D. I hope they don't go the Temple Run route.
I don't know. The picture looks a bit 3D, or suggests 3D.
You never know. They might do something amazing, and it might be really good. We might all say, ah, so this is what's been missing from these games
all this time. It's a bird running, not flying. I would have thought it would be an endless flyer, or at least an endless launcher. Surely they've got to start in a catapult and ping out. No, because that's the Angry Birds brand. Surely at the beginning it's got to be like fa-dumpf, and then they, I don't know, roll, fly, run. It's a bird, it should fly, shouldn't it?
They don't really fly there, do they?
No, they don't. They just fall through the air, don't they? I don't know. Well, that image appeared, and so it's hinting at something new in the Angry Birds. Probably an endless runner. We'll see. Peter's very excited. Moving on. The Walking Dead, 400 days. Now, The Walking Dead did extraordinarily well, and rightfully so, because it was really, really good. That first season of 5 episodes was like hailed as the greatest thing ever, and the developers were raised on the shoulders of gaming audiences, and so they went, all right, we'll give you another season. But in between then, they are sneaking out a DLC episode to accompany the first season called 400 Days. It's an all-new thing with 5 separate storylines all bundled into the one episode, apparently. So new characters, you're not dealing with Lee and Clementine and all of that. Whole new setup. There's a brief trailer up again on the site. Go and check it out. It very much looks like The Walking Dead, same sort of somber tone, graphical style, everything. It's perfectly in keeping, but there's just going to be more of it. I'm excited for this because I really enjoyed the first season. I know you were kind of keen, Keith, and Peter, you were frightened like a child.
I was frightened. I didn't like it. It was all about zombies.
Sigh.
There's hardly any zombies in it. That was the brilliant thing about it is that you go hours without seeing zombies. It's just conversations.
It's because you and your colleagues are the enemy. That's what it is.
You know, so this is the episode before season two. So this is a sort of like interquel.
Well, it's interquel. Yeah, it's an in-betweeny thing. I don't know where it's set chronologically, whether it's a prequel or comes after or it's all happening at the same time. We just know that it's a different story with different people in it.
Well, it's many different stories, isn't it? You're going to play lots of different perspectives. I don't. Telltale's like a really great, again, it's like Telltale's a really great company and they make really good games. They're just not really for me. They're just a bit like... Don't talk to me anymore on this podcast because I'm such a grump today. I'm in such a hump. I don't know.
What happened? Who sneezed
that
you called?
I need to get out of this rut. I don't... Because the thing is, like, I guess I'm sort of like... I know this is going off on one, but like, you know, we've had all this E3 and WWDC stuff and all that sort of thing, but it's just all sequels. Like it's all. You know, I just kind of feel like there's been so much.
Welcome to recession era gaming.
Yeah, I know.
Everything has to be an iteration. Everything has to have a six after it.
Absolutely, but I don't. You know, I don't know why. You know, I don't know why that's necessarily like complaining about it is necessarily like a bad thing. It just feels like at the moment. There's like, yeah, like this is great for all those people who are interested in like The Walking Dead and that sort of thing. But I really want to see what Telltale does next. Like they're, you know, they've been on this, you know, they've just had one of the most critically acclaimed video game series of all time, you know, and they're sort of like doing this extra little story and that sort of thing. Like, I don't really, I'd much prefer to see what that team did with a different license or a different idea entirely rather than kind of go back to the same thing again. Like, I understand the economics of it. It's just...
I think the advantage with The Walking Dead is because it's essentially, if you strip it right down, it's a story book where you interact a little bit.
Yeah.
Is that if you're good at telling stories, which the first season would suggest they are,
mm-hmm.
You can essentially tell as many stories as you want and people will still want it. It's not as if they invented any... it's not a new genre in terms of, I mean, it's essentially kind of lifts from other game. It's a bit point and clicky. It's a bit QTE. It's a bit, so it's not like they're going to make the same. It's not like a shooter where you then release another shooter and essentially you're just in a load of maps that look very similar to the last game in that this is almost like, you know, someone doing the next Harry Potter in that you're telling another story.
Mm.
And so that it should feel less like a sequel. I think it's more, you know, it's a story, and as long as you've got people who know how to write a story,
and they clearly do. They clearly do know how to write a good story.
It doesn't matter. I mean, I wouldn't even be as cynical. Obviously, the money involved, and it's been a massive hit, actually.
Yeah, it really has.
It's
been more of a critical hit than it's been. So I think they're entitled to do more of that because they probably really enjoy it.
I'm kind of up for it. Funnily enough, I think you're in the rut that I was in about 2 years ago. Peter, I had a similar thing around about the summer where I was just like, I'm so sick of all these sequels. And I kept saying it to people and everyone kept having a go at me for being a misery guts. But I was really on this kind of like, oh, for God's sake, someone do something new. I long for a fresh IP or something like that. And there was this bit in 2009 where EA released a whole bunch of new things. It was the year they released Dead Space and the year they released Mirror's Edge and the year they released Brutal Legend and all these new IPs. And I was like, you know, for the first time, EA, hats off to you for actually taking a gamble and doing something new.
They all kind of flopped.
Yeah. Well, apart from Dead Space, which then prompted the inevitable sequels. And that was sort of the problem. I was like, I'm so pleased they've done this, but is this just the bedrock for the next 5 years of smash and grab sequels? And the one that worked, it was. So I was like, oh, for God's sake. I mean,
like to give it its dues, at least this is a sequel to a brilliant video game. Like, yeah. At least this is, you know, it's not you know, the new gangster, is it?
More on that later.
The other thing is that if you compare it to, say, like The Room, another critically acclaimed game, I wouldn't want to play another Room.
Oh, because, I would.
Well, it literally would just be more of the same. It would
I reckon they'll introduce new things because there's so much room for kind of like I don't know, magic and extra dimensional stuff that they hinted at in the first game.
Challenge is still going to be the same in that you're you know, problem solving. You're moving this to do that and putting that there and so whatever they do, whether they change how you interact with it slightly or some of the story elements, that is a definite sequel. Whereas I think with a game like The Walking Dead, because it's actually almost not a game a lot of the time, there is potential there to tell completely different story. I mean, you could almost tell a story from the zombies' point of view, couldn't you? You could do something radical like that. You could completely flip it, keeping exactly the same structure, but making something that feels completely different depending on whose point of view, what story you want to tell. So,
Keith, tell a story from the zombie's perspective would take a lot of brains.
And on that note, we end the podcast, the final episode of the podcast, because that pun just killed my soul.
That pun's nearly as old as the dead.
Moving straight on. Asphalt 8, Airborne, is coming out.
Good.
Good. Game Loft, it's 8. You know, it's got to be good.
It looks a bit burnouty from the screenshot I saw.
It looks a bit smashy and grabby, but all I'm going to say is make sure you played 1 through 7 or 8 will make no sense at all. So, you know.
The plot is really, really deep.
You better catch up. Slightly more interesting news. There's been a lot of Trials-like games on the App Store. We've had what's the one with the little blokey riding a motorbike with a red helmet?
Joe Danger,
there you go. Yeah, a lot of those things have come to iOS. Motor Heroes is another one, which, as I say, is a 4x4 affair, not motorbikes. But we've all been referring to them as, you know, these Trials-like games. Well, Red Lynx, who make Trials, have finally decided to put Trials on iOS. It's called Trials Frontier, and they busted it out during E3. And it looks very much like Trials. It's perhaps a little bit more cartoony, I guess, than the other one. Not that the other one was hyper-realistic or anything. But there's also a couple of new elements, one of them being tricks. And as I understand it, this hasn't gone down brilliantly with the core Trials community.
Oh, they are up in arms. So the word on the streets, James, is that the Trials fans are generally not very happy about the fact that they've added tricks into the mix. That rhymes. I've no idea why. I guess it's to sort of getting away from the purity of the Trials games.
The purity of pulling a flip and having one of the members of Jackass go woo-hoo!
The thing is, though, that what these people should probably try and understand is that actually Trials on a mobile device isn't going to be for the people who want the purity of the Trials experience, because Trials is all about man versus controller. It's about the tiny fractions of millimeters of difference that you move on the analog stick that sort of get you the fastest times. It's not about a digital input on a touch device. No. You know, there's no way that it can be as precise as that. So actually, this is indicative of a very smart move forward that's a lot more like Joe Danger in that way, in so much as the developers at Hello Games wanted to create an experience that was more accessible, more less fidelity than the actual home console counterpart. I think it actually makes a lot more sense in this way.
Well, I'm always pleased when developers do try and tailor the thing for the device. Just porting it over, as you say, probably wouldn't have given the best results. I like Trials. I think Trials is great. It's one of those fantastic bunch of people around and everyone have a bash at it and then no one gives up the controller because they're like, yeah, just one more go.
You invite a bunch of people around for a bash, do you?
Oh, Keith. Just because I'm back, you don't need to show off, all right?
Between your filth and Peter's puns, I don't know. I could end this podcast anytime, you know?
That's why people come to this podcast.
I was wondering why I hadn't had an invite, but...
Yeah, well, you know, it's a very exclusive club, this Bash Club.
Bash Club.
Bash Club.
No one talks about name. Bash Club, all right.
That's a good game name. Game Loft, Bash Club.
The first rule of Bash Club is no one talks about it. Second rule is you bring your own Kleenex.
Yay! That was the joke I was going to make. Yay! Synergy.
You've dragged me down to your level. I hope you're all very pleased with yourself.
Other tissues are available.
Trials Frontier will be available in 2014. Moving on, they busted out the iOS remake of Oddworld Stranger's Wrath, which I'm only partially familiar with because I remember the original Oddworld games from the PlayStation days, and I always loved the art style, but I found them quite tricky, in a good way, but they are quite tricky. Stranger's Wrath is like a first and or third person game that came out on the Xbox, right?
Yes.
It was wasn't it around the launch? It was one of the exclusives they nabbed at the time, I seem to remember.
It was, I don't think it was launch, but yeah, the original Xbox One had this sort of first and third person shooting, little bit open worldy, sort of Wild West game in which you go around as the stranger and you fight a bunch of bad guys. It doesn't really feature Abe or the other one too much. The one you're thinking of, Keith, is Munch's Odyssey, which was a launch title, and that was basically the same thing as the 2D games, but in 3D.
So it's ever an IP that's ever really... I don't think people really understand what it is.
Yes, well, now, Abe's Odyssey sold like absolute... gangbusters, basically, like, because it was included on one of the first PlayStation demo discs and people really, really went for it and it was absolutely gorgeous. But yeah, from like Abe's Exodus onwards, it didn't really sort of, it went downhill a little bit. And people have sort of been clamoring for Oddworld games, like loads. They've been like, oh, we've got no new Oddworld games. And then like two come along at once because there's this and then there's the Abe's Odyssey New and Tasty. Yeah, New and Tasty, which is the HD remake, basically.
Okay.
So you know, it's kind of cool. It's a bit of a shame that it's going to just have the Xbox visuals rather than the updated PC ones. But, you know, it's a good game. Really good game.
Okay. Well, I might give that a bash. When it comes...
Where are you going to give it a bash?
Oh, God.
Give it a bash club and...
Other tissues are available. Yeah, those are the main things that they've launched. There were some pre-E3 stuff that we talked about last week. Obviously, Modern Combat 5 is coming out, and that's a big deal if you have to.
Modern Combat 5.
Plants vs. Zombies 2 is coming out as well, like next month, July 18th, I think.
Peggle 2?
Peggle 2, yes. That got a lot of excitement online. Mm. Everyone went, woo, to Peggle. I can't, again, interested to see what they do new with it, but Peggle is good. There's no two ways around it.
Did we touch on this? Well, I didn't, but did you touch on this last week about how they're doing an official controller support, API level controller support?
Oh yeah, that's another thing that came out. Oh yeah, we should probably discuss that a little bit.
So you know, in iOS 7 there's going to be API level controller support for and it's going to be obviously, you know, put in by Apple, so Apple is going to be supporting controllers. There isn't a official confirmation as to whether or not they're going to make their own, but they do have a sort of schematics and designs mocked up that people should follow if they are going to create a controller for them. And I was kind of thinking about this, like, I really dislike the Modern Combat games because I don't like the way that they control. It makes me feel like a drunk wandering around with an MP5 rather than some sort of like military hard man. But with a cover for my iPhone that also doubles up as a really neat little controller, you know, suddenly those games become a lot more palatable, even if the casual racism and misogyny is a little bit much to handle. You know, you can always mute that, but the actual shooting is really good in those games when you get down to the sort of like brass tacks of it all. So, you know, if that comes out and it's got controller support and there's a little controller I can get, I'll grab that.
Yeah, the schematics are actually up on the website. You can go and have a look at that one. And yeah, there's two kind of options. One which seems to be built like a case that surrounds the screen and looks more like, I don't know, maybe like a Nintendo DS. It's got a kind of D-pad and one little movie controller bit and some buttons. There's another one below which seems to be a separate controller, which kind of looks like, I don't know, it's like the shape of a NES or Mega Drive controller, as in it's like down, it's kind of tilted down at the sides. Then the bottom analog sticks, they look like that controller from the Wii.
Yeah, a lot of people have been saying it looks like the classic controller.
That's right, the classic controller. Yeah, it looks a little bit like that.
It's all post Jobs, isn't it? They'd have never done this on Jobs.
And the iPhone's next iPhone 6 allegedly is going to be in a bunch of colors, and you know, it went 16:9 last time. And
I think this is serving as a test bed to see whether people want this. So they're not committing themselves to it, but they're opening the door to third parties doing it, which they will. And they'll be able to see how popular this is with a view to, because the big quandary about any Apple TV is with games would be, well, how would you control it? And I think if this works, they'll do something of their own.
This is absolutely, like, mark a date in your diaries, everybody. This is the start of Apple starting off the convergence of all devices that you play games on into one thing. Because this is where this is all going. Home consoles, dead. Mobiles, dead. Tablets, dead. You'll have one device and it will do absolutely everything. You'll have all of your content on it. And this is the starting point.
Now, Peter has decreed it. So shall it be.
Mm-hmm.
But as long as it doesn't interfere with my date for Bash Club.
Okay.
You can't Bash Club anymore because Kinect will be watching you the whole time. So.
Oh, that is true. It'll be watching me and judging me and then posting it on YouTube immediately. But luckily, yeah. I'll be able to access the video from my iPad using my PS3. So it'll
watch
be
it back, yeah.
That'll be pretty good, anyway. Right, that was a hell of a lot of news and stuff. We're going to talk about the games that actually came out this week. There are only a few. We'll touch on them briefly. It's this week's new releases. First on this week's new releases, it's Snoop Dogg, a.k.a. Snoop Lion, a.k.a. that tall, slender chap who is in NWA with the funny voice who enjoys recreational... ingestion of a smoke-like substance.
Right. Is it ingestion?
Of an indeterminate origin.
Right.
I think I got away with that. His game. He's got a game that's just coming out now. It's out now, actually. It's not just coming out. It is out. It's called Way of the Dog, and it's kind of a rhythm brawler thing. I think we've mentioned it before. It looks... Well, the big surprise, I suppose, is it's actually quite good.
Yep.
As it turns out. It came out on Xbox Live about a month ago to sort of fairly decent reviews. Snoop Dogg is your sensei, and... it's not written down, but I remember talking about this before. Your name, the name of your character is like Joe America or something. America Jones, that's it.
Yeah, America Jones.
Yeah, that's the name of your character, which is the best name in the history of names. And Snoop will train you up gangster style and ninja style, weirdly. And what you have to do is like touch the screen and do swipes and do gestures in time to beat the pulp out of other people. And... it's kind of fun, and it's really well presented, and you know, it's kind of a cel-shaded sort of look to the whole thing. And despite it being very daft and tongue-in-cheek, it's kind of jolly. You can get it right now. It's £1.99 or $2.99.
I wonder if it'll get a high score.
This is your second warning, Willington. My finger is hovering over the cancel button on this recording. Let's see if you can redeem yourself with this entirely unpunnable title. Despicable Me, Minion Rush. Because that new Despicable Me movie is coming out, Gameloft has done the obligatory tie-in in the obligatory genre of Endless Runner. I've played this. It's alright. It's just an Endless Runner.
You play a lot of games, don't you?
I do now. Before I didn't play any. Now I play them all.
Is Despicable Me... It's a film, isn't it?
It's the one with Steve Carell being he's the guy who's in the American Office.
I haven't watched that. What's
neither have I. The guy who was in The 40-Year-Old Virgin.
This conversation got...
Yeah, 40-Year-Old Virgin.
He's just like standard schlub guy.
Yeah, is he the big man with a beard?
No.
Yeah, like so it. It's... Yeah, good. It's an endless runner in the 3D Temple Run format. It stars the little yellow gits who are created by the Despicable Me character. I've not seen the film. I've seen a little bit of it and it looked dull. And one of those not Pixar Digimations that just are just bland and a bit DreamWorksy. And the reviews weren't great for it. Apparently, the new one's got standing ovations and is really smart and clever, according to some very early preview screenings. Huh. But I'll believe that when I see it, or not see it, as the case may be.
I saw a trailer for this in the cinema. I can't remember which film I was to see, and I was in the cinema. I was quite busy, and the people around me were all laughing at this trailer, and I don't know why. I think it's probably because they're idiots.
That's a weird feeling, isn't it? When you're like, apparently this is funny.
Well, it's a horrible feeling when you're sat somewhere in the public and you realise how out of touch you are with public. Like for example, do you remember when there was that TV programme on and it was basically all about one man putting on the same funny voice, but he had like a big plastic chin and it was called something like Beau Select or something like that.
Oh, Beau Selector, yes.
And like I would be sat with you know, whatever people, and they'd be laughing hysterically.
His Michael Jackson was good, but the rest.
He did like a Craig David character, and like there were one or two characters where you went, that's quite funny, like in this one-off instance. But all the other times, like you know, you sort of like going, all you've done is put on blackface and a wig. That doesn't make you Mel B.
Don't you crush my dreams, Willington.
Mel B's one was quite good.
But you'd watch it and people were like losing their poop over it. And you'd just be thinking, what are you doing?
We appear to have reached an impasse on the humour levels.
America's not understand anything we've just said.
A very old TV show that no one cares about. This thing, there's a trailer up for it on the site. And you can see it, and it's Gameloft. It's very slick, like it's really well presented. It looks very shiny, very sharp, and there seems to have been a good amount of tension and character page with visual details. I will say that, and it plays just fine. Beyond that, I don't really care. It is just another endless runner in the long line of Gameloft and movie tie-in endless runners. So, you know. I don't know how much it is. I think I'm going to assume it's free because it's bugging me for in-app purchases every 5 seconds. So if it's not free, it's a bloody outrage.
So are you Steve Carell in this?
Man of Steel. Ever since that Alan Partridge trailer came out and they were trying to pick the name and he referred to it as Chap of Steel, that's all I call Man of Steel now. So Chap of Steel is now out on iOS. It's the movie tie-in to Zack Snyder's Chap of Steel. And it's about punching.
Right.
As you might imagine. I've played this as well for quite a while, actually. It's done in Infinity Blade style, yet again. So you're bashing the snot out of General Zod and his black PVC-wearing cronies. And you do it in gesture control fighting. You hold the screen to block and you can, you know, dodge side to side, all like Infinity Blade, which is all fine. Problem is, General Zod's crew are all dressed pretty much the same way. So you're just fighting like endless processions of these black PVC wearing guys and occasionally a girl. Mm. And so all the enemies look, you know, borderline identical. And Superman looks the same, although you can upgrade characters if you get gems and you have to, you know, either grind to earn them or in-app purchases, obviously. So despite the backgrounds kind of changing a bit, you've got the Kent farm and you've got like this bit in space and you've got some other bits in Smallville. It looks very similar when you're fighting the enemies. And the combat is not really varied enough to make a big fuss about, because he's Superman. He can't start busting out chainsaws and axes and morning stars and all that. He just has to he busts his laser eye thing out. He goes, does the heat ray. And that's about it.
Well, colour me surprised that a licensed mobile game featuring Superman, who has never had a good video game to his name, is a little bit naff.
It's not completely rubbish.
Yeah, go on.
God, I want to swear on this podcast so bad.
Yeah.
It's not complete and total pants or anything, which is ironic because he has no pants in this one.
Oh. He doesn't wear any pants.
Well, this is the big redesign for Superman. He got no pants. You know how he has his red pants on the outside?
Now, American listeners, we are referring to... referring to? Briefs?
Referring to underwear.
Underwear, yes.
Underpants.
Underpants.
Yeah, that's what we're referring to.
But he is wearing trousers.
Yes, he is wearing trousers. Yes.
Yeah, that would be
that will be a very different game.
Man of Steel, indeed.
Yes, and probably a higher grossing movie.
Should I join your bash club.
Yes, Superman is the chairman of bash club. but you better be careful because his bash. Boy, has he got a bash on him. Yeah. That guy.
I wouldn't want to go near that chair.
Well, you can buy, it's in two different versions. You've got the normal version, iPhone, it's £299, $499, or the HD version is £299, $499. Whoever wrote this article got slightly confused. Okay, I'm going to guess that the standard version's maybe £1.99, and the HD version's a quid more.
Why guess when we can use the internet?
Yes,
you're right.
Click away. So that's probably what it is. It's not awful. If you're Man of Steel guy, have a look. Finally, here's a game that I have absolutely no clue about. Have you ever heard of a board game called Agricola?
Yes, but only because Playdeck email me about it every day.
Oh, really?
Yeah.
I was hoping you'd be the guy because you know about things. Apparently, it's a Playdeck touchscreen version of a strategy game that is trying to get you to build a farm and keep it running in the 17th century.
Sure.
Which,
you know,
is that as exciting as it sounds?
That's like a BBC 4 series to me.
So it's based on like a hardcore, I think it's German board game. You know, it's a strategy game in so much as you need to kind of allocate resources and, you know, grow your farm and sort of extend out, basically. There's tactics, but there's not like aggressive tactical, what you usually think of in these sort of like board games. There's no like war bits.
Okay.
No
corn wars or anything like that.
No corn wars. No potato fracas.
Very good. Very nice. Good pull.
Thank you.
Problem is, if you say farm and grow and that to me and harvest, my brain just shuts off immediately through saturation caused by farm.
Well, it's funny that you went Farmville. I instantly went Harvest Moon, and it's not that. But one of the things that this version's kind of touting supposedly is like asynchronous multiplayer. So
yeah, that's a good thing.
Like again, yeah, like really, like it just seems like Playdeck. For as much as I was sort of like saying, you know, they keep emailing me and stuff, like it is a company that does know how to make these games and translate them well to iOS. So,
well, this is a bit pricey. It's £4.99, $6.99. But I guess often with these translations of board games, they are on the steeper end of the price spectrum. So if you remember it fondly on looking to get it digitally, then now is your chance. Agricola out right now. That's pretty much it for new releases, but we're going to talk quickly-ish about the games we've been playing this week. Let's do that right now. It's what we've been playing.
What we've been playing!
Okay, first up this week, we'll tag Peter. Peter, you're it. What have you been playing this week?
As a blue hedgehog, right? And he's called Sonic, and he was on these old consoles when, like, a character mascot platformer was a thing that you would release.
He was that guy.
And between Sonic 1 and Sonic 2, they released a game called Sonic CD. Was for the Sega CD, which was a criminally underused system that had a
hugely successful console that had a billion brilliant games on it.
Amazing games. Yeah. It did have, I want to say in Japan, it had Police Nauts. It definitely had Snatcher. It
had Bram Stoker's Dracula with Keanu Reeves.
It did have Bram Stoker's Dracula.
And that was the bestest.
Where is that on the App Store? Come on.
I know.
But no, Sonic CD, this was the Sonic team trying things with Sonic that actually made sense.
I can't even speak. I'm so stunned at that accusation.
I know. So where Sonic 1 and Sonic 2 were fairly sort of standard platformers with, you know, this thing, oh, it's so fast, oh, you can get through the different levels in different ways. Like, that was always boring to me, like, because Mario was just a better platformer, just handled better. But the cool thing about Sonic...
Are you going to take that?
I'm going to let him finish.
I think the cool thing about Sonic CD was that it had this time-traveling mechanic whereby you rush past these gates and then this awesome voice goes future or past, and then you had to go really fast.
Awesome voice.
Yeah, it was a really awesome voice. Imagine that, but if I did it like through
awesomely,
and you basically had to keep going really, really fast, and then you went into the future or you went into the past, and you would have different versions of the same levels. So there were, you know, three versions of every single level in the game, and there's a fair number of levels to begin with, and it would make things harder or easier. And this was the introduction, I believe, of Metal Sonic. And the bosses were absolutely huge with lots of really big moving parts. I think Amy Rose made her debut and was not a complete
stupid bloody Amy.
Yeah, useless, awful, horrible lady, hedgehog thing.
She has a big hammer.
She has got a big hammer. this is the version on iOS, and I got it because I just kind of thought, well, I'd like it. I'd like to see, you know, I've had some good run-ins with some platformers recently, and I was not disappointed. You know, after Keith was saying about this pixel guy who he's got a company called something like I Love Pixels or whatever, and he basically brought Sonic CD. He said he was going to do a Sonic CD version for Windows Phone or something like that, or for iOS. And then Sega were like, no, you're not. And then they hired him to do it themselves because it was such a good version of it. So I got this Sonic CD version, and it's absolutely brilliant. Like, it controls really well. I think it's, but it's also just a very good game. And I think actually, I think this is probably one of the best Sonic games that they've made. I think it nearly trumps. I think it nearly trumps the best Sonic game ever made, which, as you and I will both agree, is Sonic Adventure on the Neo Geo Pocket Color.
It's on.
Because on the Neo Geo Pocket Color, of course, that version was just, you know, it was really superb. And I even think that it beats the my previously second favorite Sonic game, Sonic the Hedgehog for the Master System. So I feel like it's done very well. It's not as fast as like later Sonic games would become, and I think actually that's to its credit. It is a much more cerebral platformer in some ways, and it gets closer to a Mario game, which is really what I wanted. This version is just ace. Like, the digital controls work really well. You can play as Tails. I believe you can play as like Super Sonic and Metal Sonic and all that sort of stuff as well. There's Japanese and American soundtracks, which apparently are very wildly different. It's just really, it's a really good Sonic game that was when Sonic was being made by people who seemed to know what they were doing. I'm really thoroughly, thoroughly enjoying it. And I'm very tempted to go back and get the first Sonic on Mega Drive now, just to kind of make notes and compare.
You should get the iOS version of the first Sonic, especially.
That's what I mean. Sorry, yeah.
Yeah, no, you should get that. That's very good. It's the same. They've used the same guy.
Yeah.
I enjoyed Sonic CD on the touchscreen phone as well.
It's good, isn't it?
It was good.
No, so, yeah, that's why it's nearly one of the best Sonic games, isn't that right, Keith?
It's not one of the worst. There have been plenty worse. Of that era, it's the worst.
You need to very clearly document why, because there are games like Sonic 3 coming out of that era,
Sonic and Knuckles is the best Sonic game ever.
What are you talking about?
It has the best levels, and was at the time when they completely understood what they were doing, and then from that moment,
they completely understood that they were messing up that franchise.
No, that is the ultimate of that franchise. You're right in several observations in that it's a very, very good port because they use the sky. It's very well done, and it benefits in part because of those initial five games, not including Spinball. It has a much slower pace than everything they've tried to do since, and that's where they always go wrong, aside from the awful 3D versions. It's that even in most of the 2D ones, apart from the odd moment in some of the advanced series on GBA, they always get obsessed with this idea that it's about being quick, and it isn't. Sonic's always worse when it's quick. Anyone who used to play those games, and you know, you couldn't save, and you were playing it in one go, you went as slow as you possibly could once you got beyond Green Hill or any of the first stages, because potentially it could all be over and you get stuck somewhere for hours. And so it was always a very prudent game for anyone who actually played the whole thing. And so it has that going for it. But the problem with Sonic CD is the time travel bit serves no purpose whatsoever other than to show off the tech. It doesn't help. It doesn't.
Yeah, no, that's incorrect, because if you complete certain stages at certain periods of time, it's either harder or easier. So, for example, the race against Metal Sonic, where you need to not massively outpace him, but not fall behind and get shot by Dr. Robotnik's lasers. If you're in the future, I think it is, the scaffolding that you're running on is much more jagged, and therefore you're more likely to stop and therefore get hit by Robotnik.
But that's not something you can build an entire game around. I mean, in general, when you're playing through the levels, it doesn't achieve anything other than the rings are there again once you change. So you fly past one of those posts, you go back or you go forward, and the rings where you've previously caught them in the past or the future are there, so you could get lots of rings. But the other problem is to activate that anyway, you have to keep running for such a long time that you end up running past half of everything. So it's like a tech demo. It doesn't really solve any problem that there was with the original Sonic games or add anything new. It's just a weird kind of feature that let them play around with the artwork, really. And because, you know, they couldn't have done it at the time, fit that on a cartridge, I suspect. So you kind of think... And the other problem with Sonic CD is that it was one of those games, because no one on Earth had a Mega CD, that everyone who was a Sonic fan, a bit like Chaotix on Mega 32X, would see screenshots of and think, oh, wow, if I only had the money to get one of them, it must be amazing. And then, of course, when people started emulating, when, you know, PC era comes along and you can get, you know, you can download the files for any of these games really easy, and all these Sonic fans got Sonic CD and they got Chaotix and realized actually they weren't the best, and actually the music's bloody awful whether you're playing the US or the Japanese.
No, the Japanese...
It's
no,
just terrible.
Japanese soundtrack's music. Amazing.
The problem with Sonic's soundtrack have always been awful once they got beyond the Mega Drive's, you know, little keyboardy thing, in that it doesn't work. You bring in real instruments or some stick with
it's
a guitar in it.
The rock guitar, yeah, that's the
worst.
It
ruins it. It's not Sonic in the slightest. So you've got a game... It has the old kind of level design style of the old Sonics, and the levels are quite big, and you know, some of it looks very sharp, but it doesn't have its own kind of purpose that all the other Sonic games of that era do. It just feels like, I mean, it was the Sonic 1 team that did it. The Sonic 2 team was completely different, so they were both made at the same time, and I'd say of the two, Sonic 2 is vastly, vastly, vastly better.
Sonic 2 has the Chemical Zone plant in it, and therefore wins.
Sonic 2
on the basis of that.
It's a brilliant game.
But it's such a smarter, more paced, like, it's gorgeous, absolutely amazing to look
at. It's nice to look at.
If you go back
and play the other versions on iOS, you know, or even if, you know, you got out Mega Drive out and played them, and you played them all in a row, It's evidently clear that is the weak link.
Okay, I think we're going to have to call time on this, because clearly this is going to run and run. I'm going to talk very quickly about what I played this week. I played loads of things, but the main thing I did, I suppose, is I've been playing Gangstar Vegas.
Oh, is that good?
It's crap, Peter. That is my review. It's crap. Two thumbs down and a frowny face.
Mm.
really quickly, if anyone's not familiar with the franchise, it's a GTA clone. That's all you need to say about it. It's by Gameloft. So, you know, prior form there. And this is the most recent one. They've taken it to Vegas. It's really garish, and the stereotypes are awful, and the sexual politics are ridiculous, and the controls are rubbish, and it's glitchy as hell. It's really big. Like, they've made the city, like, 8 times bigger than it was in previous games, and it looks okay. Visuals are fine. And they've gone for, like, a tap-on-the-screen lock-on control, which is, you know, arguably superior to the ports they've done of GTA 3 and GTA Vice City, because they weren't obviously designed with touchscreens in mind. But it doesn't matter that it's bigger and that there are loads of missions, because playing it is not pleasurable in any way. It's just,
but
it's
why are they rubbish? Like, surely it's just the same sort of stuff that you get, you know, just chasing around, driving and stuff. Like, why is it different to Grand Theft Auto?
With Grand Theft Auto, those franchises worked because even though they were inspired by other things, even though Vice City is clearly like Scarface the game, it was quite well written. They got a lot of proper actors, Ray Liotta and people like that doing voices. It was done with this layer of kind of rock star sheen, rock star class. They're quite good at that. And so when you try and do a copy of that, and you are essentially doing what is a pastiche of a pastiche, it gets completely lost in translation. And the other thing is that this kind of game, this sort of open world, third person, racing, shooting kind of game, is just so unsuitable for iOS. It just has no business being on there. And the reason the Gangstar existed was because Gameloft were doing what they usually do, which is, oh, here's a console franchise, we're going to put it on iOS. And that's what they did, that's what Modern Combat is, and, you know, that's what they do. But now, you can get Grand Theft Auto 3 and Grand Theft Auto Vice City on iOS. And they've done a pretty good job of the conversion. Again, the controls aren't as ideal as you would like, but I'll tell you what, even though they made sort of 10 years ago and they've done this conversion system, they're more reliable than Gangstar Vegas, a hell of a lot more reliable. Just moving the guy around is a complete pain in the ass. The lock-on system is ridiculous. The firefights are so dull because you're just, there's a cover system and you just crouch down and the game chooses occasionally what it wants to lock onto depending on its mood, and you tap on something and it locks on there for a bit and then it switches to someone else because it feels like it, and the enemies just sort of stand there, drift in and out, cover, in and out, and it's just so dull. And less said about the whole, every female character in the game is either a hideous criminal, a stripper, a hooker, or wearing the tiniest shorts and stuff imaginable. Now, I know, obviously, it's supposed to be a crime sort of game, and the idea is they're, you know, playing with that sleazy underbelly of the strip or whatever. But it doesn't come off. You have to have something to back that up. If you're going to do that thing where you're, you know, doing a pastiche of a genre, it has to be knowing. You have to be making good jokes or something like that. And it's not doing any of those things. It's just playing it relatively straight and being very dull and very boorish and very irritatingly blokey. And even though it is doing the same things that GTA does with shooting and driving, and, you know, that's what GTA was. It was run around, shoot, drive, do missions. You could control it, and it was pleasurable to do it, and the cutscenes in between were, you know, entertaining, and the narrative was interesting. This one isn't. The narrative is not interesting, the characters are not fun or interesting, and the controls are horrible. And it costs like a fiver. So don't get it, Keith. What have you been playing this week, sir?
Well, I haven't really. My intention was to play the new Kingdom Rush, but
yes, what you promised said.
Well, yeah, because my boss and fellow podcaster John is away at E3, as is the other guy who works on Biz, the aforementioned Matt. It's just me doing all the work this week, so I haven't really had a chance. I've played it briefly, played the first couple of levels, but I'm probably not qualified to give an ultimate judgment on a game based on that amount of playtime.
I reviewed it.
And what did you think?
It's really good.
It is really
good. It's more of the same. I mean, from what we talked about before when we were looking at it going, ooh, it looked like it was more of the same. And it is. It is more of the same. It's you know, the same mechanics. There are a couple of new things. You know, these boss characters come trotting out, and obviously there are a couple of new tower types and upgrades that you can get. That's cool. But it is essentially the same thing.
Mm-hmm. I mean, which is it's quite it almost feel you could go from the last level of the first game and just go straight into this one, and
yeah,
you wouldn't
yeah,
notice.
In some ways you could.
But I do like the artwork, and some of the first couple of levels are kind of have a kind of Araby deserty kind of feel to them that is really nice. It's just an
one of the desert levels is like it's Star Wars themed. There's like Tusken Raiders on the hill.
Exactly. It's they know their market, I think, so they know the kind of people who are playing and what references and beats they'll understand. So
yeah,
but I shall hopefully play it more one day.
when you're not working. Because I started doing the second one, I've got a friend called Matt who's really into strategy, and I was like, get Kingdom Rush, because he's a droid guy, he's got a Nexus, and I was like, get Kingdom Rush if you haven't already got it. And he went, all right. And all I've heard from him, the occasional peeps of him just saying, like, going home, not even turning on my PC, going straight to the tablet and just playing Kingdom Rush, and the sequel's really good too. So that's what Keith's been playing this week.
Or not playing, yeah. John just stopped swanning off places.
Hopefully he'll be back next week. He can tell us tales of E3.
Gather round, children!
I'll just make up some rumours like he always does. He's heard in his head.
Yeah, probably that too. Well, it's been a bit of a long one this week, but, you know, E3 and all that. We'll be back next week with even more of your exciting stuff. There should be some more new releases now that the E3 flap is over. So come back and tune in. Find us on Facebook and Twitter and all of those places. And we'll catch up with you very, very soon. Thanks for listening. Take it easy. Bye-bye.